welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two on this Friday edition of the Hagman Report. Sean from SGT Report was our guest in the last hour, did a fantastic job laying out a case of against the establishment elites and all the corruption and darkness that they continue to worship and, you know, putting down in their hatred for Jesus and all his followers. So accurate, and we see it ever increasing in the days that we live today. We have Rox Chella coming on, but first we're going to get a quick word from Alan Riggs from Greenovative. He's just going to stop in. He lives in Florida. His business was damaged by Hurricane Irma, and he's helping to lead a few efforts to help victims of Hurricane Harvey and Irma with his company Greenovative and the rechargeable battery products that he offers. So we're going to hear from him in just a few minutes. St. Louis looks like it is getting a little rowdy as cops have deployed pepper spray and listed all the gatherings as to be dispersed because they say they're no longer peaceful protests. So we're going to keep our eye on that. And also, I'm getting a thumbs up from Eric. We got Alan. Folks, Alan Riggs from greenovative.com. Alan, thank you so much for joining us. We only have a few minutes to talk with you. Why don't you come in and
evening,
jump
gentlemen.
Right in. How's it going? Alan, can you hear me? We might have lost Alan. We're having some technical difficulties with the interface software that interfaces to put the images and the different camera angles up on YouTube. And I know Eric's working hard on that. You got to turn your mic on.
And isn't it, thank you, Joe. It does help. And isn't it interesting that, that we, you know, we bring in night after night of these shows with little or no IT difficulty. But when we have Sean from SGT Report, sgtreport.com on to just lay it out saying, look, the Luciferian elite have taken off their masks. They're here. They're proud of it. And this is what it is. Boom. Drop the mic. Walk away. And of course, tonight we're having all these difficulties. Alan, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me.
Alan, welcome to the Hagman Report.
Great. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Well, we're pleased to have you. Let's go ahead and get a sit rep from you down there in Irma region. We were able to speak with you privately a little bit last week, but go ahead and fill in our listeners and viewers. Tell us what's going on.
Well, I figured out something in Florida. If you have to figure out whether you're going to go east or west, what you need to do is go north. So we went north to Knoxville, Tennessee, and escaped the hurricane ourselves. But when we came back home, and the trip was terrible both ways, about 19, 20 hours in stop-and-go traffic, we got back home and our condo was fine, a little bit of flooding and a little bit of wet carpets, that sort of thing, easy to take care of. My shop, though, in the office, the roof was laying on the floor, and I had a roof from another building, a neighbor building, about a block away in my parking lot and draped over my fence. The wind here was horrendous. I'm hearing reports from the Caring Hearts folks that they're finding people where they are that have no houses, no food, no water, no light, just starving. They've been feeding them about 500 a day. So in the outlying areas where folks just haven't got their power turned on yet, or they have no dwelling to turn the power on, it's tough. And I don't know much about the Keys other than they were devastated. So that's developing.
Yeah, the Keys had residents that were not allowed to go back in. They said they were still pulling bodies out of different areas. And the damage from the storm surge and the wind down there was pretty bad. And the people still haven't got back to their houses yet. They don't know what's what in some areas. And power is going to be off for a long time, they say, up to weeks. So, yeah, we got to continue to pray for those people.
We will. And I have my my campaign to get my units out to folks who need them, and we're finding more and more folks who need them, and they're happy with a loaf of bread and peanut butter and jelly and some of the other of life's comforts, but they have no communications, they have no power. And I just want to show you quickly what we're planning to give these folks. This is my, we're calling it our disaster pack.
Okay.
It comes with our unit, like you've seen before. A pair of double powered pucks. Of course, the USB charger. This is what's saving everybody. Everybody wants to have their cell phone up and running. So that does that. We give,
very handy.
It does come.
Because your phone has a flashlight and other things that you can use without the internet or connection.
It does. And then it gives you the ability to get the internet connection with your smartphone. These are four AAA batteries and AAA to AA adapters. So they're going to get six AA batteries, six AAA batteries, because a lot of things are powered by AAAs. And if they need them, these double as AA batteries too. So we're getting those out. And I told you before, and if you can give me a second, we do have a GoFundMe page up, and I hated to do it that way. I just can't afford to give them away. And it's GoFundMe.com/Harvey and Irma Help. If you go on there, anything is good. A couple of bucks, $5, it all adds up, and it goes to people in need. So we're pushing that hard, and we're making progress. And I'm hearing stories, though, that just break your heart. Every day I talk to the Caring Hearts folks, and it's the problem. It's not a problem. The issue that happens with a hurricane is the hurricane comes and goes, and everything's fine, and other people get back to their normal daily lives. But the folks out in the hinterlands are still waiting for help, waiting for the guys with the chainsaws to come to move the trees. So this is going to go on for a long time, and the need for food and water and affordable power will continue for, our expectation is, a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. It's a long time. This has been just a devastating thing to have happen both to Florida and Texas, and we're dealing with those folks as well.
And so thankfully, there's people like you out there, Alan, in a number of other areas, too. You're doing power. Other people are doing food and clothes and whatnot. And it's people like you who come together and help these people that is the most touching. And, Alan, greenovative.com is the website. What number can people call you if they have any questions, comments, or
321. Thank you for asking me that. 321-638-4885. And that'll find me anywhere. If I'm not in the shop, it forwards to my cell phone, and I'd be happy to talk to you, happy to answer your questions. And for folks who need power themselves, we have our site-wide 15% off if you just put in the code Hegman. People need power. People need portable power. And I can just tell you from experience, people get this, and they find out it can charge their cell phone, and it's just a... It's like a hallelujah chorus.
Yeah, it's a first step toward recovery. Folks, you got it right there from Alan Riggs, owner of Greenovative, greenovative.com, area code 321-638-4885. GoFundMe /Harvey and Irma Help. And that is how you can directly fund people in need in these devastated areas. And Alan, thank you so much for joining us, sir. God bless you, and thank you for everything Greenovative does.
And thank you. You guys have been a tremendous help, and you're putting the word out, and God bless you.
God bless you too, Alan. We'll talk later.
Thank you much. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Again, greenovative.com is the website. Coming up in just a few moments, we're going to be joined by a guest, host of the Mad T Show, Rox Chella. Now, John's talked to her off-air. I have not had the opportunity to do so yet, but I'm excited to have her come on. I know my dad was excited to have her come on too, but he's not here tonight. So we get to do this one, and it's going to be fun. We're going to get into a number of interesting issues from the Trump administration to anywhere she really wants to take it. We're going to hear about what she does on her show and how she got to where she is.
Absolutely. You know, so Rox Chella, our guest this hour, the Mad T Show, themadtshow.com, and they just have a little promo piece here, and it sounds like a great place to go. It says, tune into the Mad T Show for engaging and informative content that will educate you as it entertains. Our hosts discuss current events, report breaking news, and conduct informative and insightful interviews as they advocate for truth, free speech, less government regulation, and a country the way our founders intended. I read that and said, guess what? Rox Chella is coming on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, Roxella, wow. How you doing?
Hey, what a great intro.
Yeah. Yeah. Joe Hagman here and John, you've talked to. It's great to have you on the show.
Hey, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's a thrill. I love this show. And of course, I miss meeting your father tonight.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to bring you back on when he's here. He did say that, he wishes he could have been here for the interview, but that just gives us another excuse to get you back on. So.
No, I don't think you need an excuse. I'm willing. And I have to say, I loved Alan just a few minutes ago, reaching out, of course, being a Florida girl here. I was blessed on the East Coast, and we expected much, much worse, and we really got off easy with maybe 70, 80 miles per hour wind, but really minimal damage compared to the West Coast, and I certainly suffer for them. But, you know, this is Hurricane Alley. It's not much you can do about it.
Yeah, no, you're right, and it is hurricane season, so right. Especially with the number of years that the U.S. went without hurricane impact, it's no surprise that, you know, we're seeing the increase in activity this year. Where would you like to start tonight? You want to tell us a little bit about yourself, what got you into the role that you are now as the host of the Mad Tea Show?
Sure, I'd love to.
Okay.
It really started out as being an actress model in New York and designer, and then moving to Florida and starting my own television show because I saw so much just good stuff that people were doing in the philanthropic area. And I wanted to be a voice for them. So I got involved with that about 14, 15 years ago, called Palm Beach Rocks. And as of course as all things do, it evolves. But one of my very first guests was Donald Trump, now of course our president. And it's so strange to look back on all these years, and I have so much footage of our president, you know, in all these different events in Mar-a-Lago and going to New York City and traveling the world. And it's amazing to look back on all these years. And of course, celebrities, not just limited to our president, but to so many other people, titans in the industry, and of course a lot of Hollywood. And having spent 14 years going on from there, I think I was due for a change. Certainly I had a real spiritual awakening. And the producer of the Mad Tea Show, Robin, called me and said, "Is this something you'd like to do? It's a show we're producing, the Mad Tea Show, which is with a group of ladies from all over the United States. And they get together once a week and we produce the show." And she said, "It's politics and some religion." And I said, "Ooh, politics? You know, I've kind of been in the Hollywood scene. I don't know that politics are really my genre." And she said, "Well, just take a look at it." And that was it. The red pill set in, as John calls it. And, you know, that was it. I go, what have I been doing all these years? What have I been thinking? I considered myself a spiritual person, and I never saw anything that I am seeing now. And that kind of started this whole voyage for me. I work with three other ladies we co-host, and then I have my own show that I do host, which is called The Mad Deep, in which we interview and we go into a lot of deep and dark areas in the pedophile, the sex trafficking area, and we bring light not only to the people that you work with, like Honey Bee, Melissa, and a lot of other people, but also things that they're doing, bringing out awareness and having, you know, charities and events. We have one that's coming up in Chicago on October 28th. And it's a lot to take in, and it's a lot to share in just 1 hour, guys.
Well, it certainly is. And for those of you just joining us, our guest this hour is Roxella. Roxella, host of the Mad Tea Show, themadteashow.com. But really, what fascinated me about Rox was, here I met this woman who's been around the world, met all kinds of heads of state, luminaries, corporate titans. In fact, if you go to HagmanReport.com and look for this evening's show title, Crushing the Collective Part 2, Just scroll down, and there's actually an amazing picture of our guest, Roxchella, with President Donald Trump. A really lovely picture, I might add. And if I'm not mistaken, I thought it might be interesting to kind of zig instead of zag. You sent us a video piece that you did, a little mini doc about the Trump family. And with your permission, we'd like to go ahead and roll that now and then maybe talk about that a little bit.
Just know that the beginning of it is the very first interview with Donald Trump.
Okay.
And here it is.
A series of books published over a century ago are receiving attention for their seemingly all too eerie connections to the Trump family. The books, one of which is titled Baron Trump's Marvelous Underground Journey, have been discussed on both Reddit and 4chan. There are some incredible connections to be made to the first family of the United States. And Ingersoll Lockwood's novel from the turn of the 19th century. Number one, the main character's name is the same as President Donald Trump's son, albeit spelled differently. Number two, Trump's adventure begins in Russia and are guided thanks to directions provided by the master of all masters, a man named Don. Number three, before leaving for his voyage through the unknown, Trump was told of his family motto. The pathway to glory is strewn with pitfalls and dangers. By Lockwood's third novel, The Last Presidents, things become very and even more eerily. They're linked to the present day and has a character that is a cabinet member named Pence. The story begins with a scene from a panicked New York City in early November, describing a state of uproar after the election of an enormously opposed outside candidate. The Fifth Avenue Hotel will be the first to feel the fury of the mob, the novel states. Citing an address in New York City where Trump Tower now stands.
All right, folks, and that was Roxchella, and we're having some issues with some technical issues. So I don't know if you heard the beginning of that. We didn't hear it in our headphones, but it did go out.
That was our time travel.
Yeah,
that's cool.
That, you know, and that's one of the things that we didn't get into. We have not talked about on the show that I've read about, and I read kind of a lot about this. But there are these books from 1900 that deal with Trump. Well, can you explain this to our audience a little bit so they understand it? Because I'm not sure. Like I said, we've never talked about this.
Well, sure, Joe. It actually takes place, as you said, in the 1900s, and it was a trilogy that was written and by Ingersoll Lockwood, and it's really a fantasy fiction. And it's about the marvelous underground journey that Baron takes, young Baron, actually. And it's written over 100 years ago. And it's so eerily similar to our time right now, where it's even so close that it identifies a New York residency on Fifth Avenue. In the book.
Yeah, that's strange. There is a lot of strange things here in the...
This is too many things, and that's why we wanted to do, you know, a short little story on it, because really it's kind of a part of this whole world that we're living to. I just heard your last guest, and he was so interesting, Sean was, and we just don't really know what to expect next.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. We see it all the time, and when you... when we brought you on at the beginning of the show and you talked about your, you know, your real introduction to politics and your eyes becoming open, we see what politics, it used to be a divisive issue, before Donald Trump was elected. Even, you know, back in, from the 60s, as each decade moved forward and progressed, it seems to become more of an issue. And today, with the way the media is and the hostility that it provokes, it is a whole nother animal, much different than it was even, you know, 5-10 years ago. And we're seeing this movement of what I call, you know, this liberal insanity, part of the political correct movement to the political violence movements that we see. and it's being pushed down our throat. And as Alaska said, everything that is good and right and moral with the world is, you know, being frowned upon by the mainstream media, and they're promoting everything that is dark and terrible and perverted, and putting that, you know, at the forefront. And it's pretty amazing to see that transformation. And you've interviewed, as you said, you interviewed Donald Trump a number of times.
Yes, a number of times. I'm like this well-kept secret, I think.
What was it that led you to start following him and doing the interviews with him?
Actually, it wasn't that I was following Donald Trump. He'd be a little afraid of me, probably think I was stalking him. You know, being Mar-a-Lago and Palm Beach, he was always so involved in politics. And you have to realize, if we want to do a little history on Palm Beach, and that's why I have to laugh at so much of the news media, because they really don't check their facts. They don't go back and see where Mar-a-Lago came from, when Donald Trump, you know, bought Mar-a-Lago, and that was, you know, really Meriwether Post had given it to the government, and they could use it as the summer White House for anyone to use. And it's coincidentally President Donald Trump's White House. But in those days in Palm Beach, everything was segregated, all the clubs. And what he did is he brought unity to Palm Beach, and that sounds funny, but he really did. He was able to bring blacks, Jews, all people together in his club. And that was something he really took a lot of pride in. And there was never an issue in Palm Beach as to, you know, where he stood. Everyone in Palm Beach hated him. I can tell you, anything he wanted to do, they didn't want it. They didn't want to have a part of it. But he, like he does in the White House, he perseveres. He really does. And he had just started the ballroom, which is one of the interviews that you have. And I'm probably one of the first interviewers to come in and take a look around and help him decide on the mahogany in the bathroom. And it was, I had no idea at the time how really involved I would become in Mar-a-Lago, Donald Trump, and this whole movement. And it's really exciting to look at this and going back. But personality-wise, in over 14 years, he hasn't changed. He still has a very, very good heart, and he cares. He's very passionate about the charities that he's involved in. In fact, going back again to Palm Beach, which really so few people know anything about and really are even invited into Mar-a-Lago for any type of event, let alone to be able to film it. And I feel very grateful these years that I've been able to do that and really to be able to show the very best of Donald Trump, our president. I'm very pleased to do that. I've seen him autograph cars for charities for children, which, of course, you know how much that would yank up a price back in the days when he was even with Apprentice. And it was pretty cool to see some of the things he's done. And I was, you know, really very, you know, humble about it. He'd write off the gala, the event, and say, you know, use my facility, my, you know, ballroom for free. Just pay for the food. I mean, he's done so many incredible things. But anyway, back to Palm Beach. He wanted to put this pole up that was taller than any pole that you were allowed to do in Palm Beach. And he put this huge pole up with, of course, our American flag on it. And he said, it's going to be there. I want this here. It's on 200 and some square feet of oceanfront, and I want it there on Intercoastal. They said, no, that's not legal. And he said, oh, yeah. So they, of course, we're going to file suit against him. And they wanted something like $250 a day fine for him not taking that down. So they finally compromised with him. He was able to put the flag up for maybe, I don't know, 42 feet and, you know, be able to put his flag out there. And they said, well, okay, you've got to pay a fine. And he said, I don't want to pay the fine to you, but I'll give it to the vets, to a charity that I'm very involved in. And that's what he did.
The art of the deal, right there. as described by our guest, Rox Cella. Rox, I want to switch gears. You have extensive, you've had extensive experience in Hollywood. Worked with Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tom Arnold, Sylvester Stallone, Sharon Stone, some of the really big names. Incidentally, I have interacted with, worked with some of those names as well. And what I'd like to do is let's just jump right into the deep end. You mentioned our associate, Melissa Zachariah, a.k.a. the Honeybee. Yeah. So you're aware of the Honeybee. You're aware of Pedogate writ large. And I know that you have a fondness. I could hear it the other day in your voice when we discussed Hollywood. I do as well have that fondness. It's difficult to experience it's cliche, but the magic of movie making and not have some affinity for it, even once you start seeing the darker side, or what I sometimes call the flip side of the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And what I'd like to ask you about, just sort of your opinion, maybe we can do broad strokes here rather than name names so nobody gets in trouble, but we recently had an investigative journalist named Liz Croken join our program and really become kind of a independent contractor to the team here at Hagman Report for a while. And her debut appearance with us, one of the Hagmans asked her, "Liz, how many of the Hollywood elite do you suspect, or do you know actually, are involved in pedophilia?" And she didn't stutter or stammer. She said about 33%. Rox, does that sound about right to you?
Well, I think as we really push the envelope, I think that when she's saying that, and I have a lot of respect for Liz Croken, I've spoken with her and had her on our show, and I think dearly of her. You know, there are a lot of different avenues that Hollywood takes. You have the infamous couch. You have the pedophiles with the children as they're going up the ranks. You have young gals that want to be actresses that are of age, but yet innocent. So you have a lot of varying degrees. So I honestly think it could be a lot higher if you take all of those into consideration.
Okay.
You know, as a model and an actress, working in New York, working in Hollywood, you know, been there, done that, not as a victim, but I certainly know of it, have seen it, and certainly have been approached in order to get a great spot on a Hollywood show. And I'm sure most actresses will tell you they've either skirted their way around it or have given into it.
And unfortunately, Rox, again, just based on my 16 years of working in the industry, and by way of complete transparency, I was a nobody in Hollywood. I was a craft person.
Oh.
But if I didn't do my job correctly, we could ignite propane in the wrong place, or have a wall come down. but when you put on a tool belt and a radio, a safety harness, you know, work up high, stuff like that, you have a unique dynamic with the actors and the actresses because they respect you. They see what you're capable of doing. And this is never articulated in Hollywood, but many times they know that you're doing something that they're afraid to do. They see you 80 feet up in the air adjusting something, working with tools, and you have this amazing muscle memory, and their job is to just reread some lines and make it organic. So you get an interesting dynamic with the talent on given shows. And one of the things that really disturbed me my last couple years in Hollywood, I was working for Disney, actually a subsidiary of Disney. I'm not going to say the company, but I will say it is the company that the show Hannah Montana built. Now, we can go down a rabbit trail just about Hannah Montana and that show alone. But, Rox, what I saw too frequently in the Disney arm, the Disney corporate infrastructure with the young talent, was right about the age 12, these young ladies went from sort of like buttercup cute, you know, to sexed up, dolled up, again at age 12. And all of a sudden, instead of just having a stage mom present, there's a little coterie of people around this young lady. They are handlers. Now, they have job titles like stylist, publicist, even the teachers, you know, the studio teachers, most of whom are amazing people. I don't want to slam them, but it's clear that something rocks is going on. And oftentimes the parents seem to disappear. And this is the part that bugs me the most. I can think of two different shows and two different occasions where the parents didn't disappear. It felt like the parents were in on it. Right. What do you think?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I think we're going to even see more of that throughout the world, as especially in America, as we tighten up drugs. And these parents need the money. They need the drugs. They're going to find their children are their best-selling tool. And I think you're going to see that, absolutely. They're, we know of it. In you and I, we can speak very freely of it. We know the industry. It's out there. It's a matter of how far you're going to go with it. What's in it for me? What's in it for them? It's really, Hollywood is a game. And they're dangerous. You know that. I know that. When you take a red pill and you've worked in Hollywood, James Wood is a perfect example of it. And I've worked with him at the in the film Specialist. When you take that red pill, you're going down the rabbit hole.
Indeed you are. And, you know, a tip of the Team Hagman hat to Mr. James Woods. I've worked with him as well on the show Ray Donovan at Sony. Okay. And, Rox, I agree with your sentiment entirely. And, you know, you're right. Hollywood is a game. And I'd like to ask you your opinion on this. You mentioned to me the other day, and in your introduction this evening as well, that when you were invited to do the Mad T Show, and be sure to check out the Mad T Show, folks, but when you were invited to do it, you were a little uncomfortable talking politics, but you had just had this what has recently become the getting red-pilled experience. Frankly, that term, it's from The Matrix, but it's only been popular.
I know.
It's only been popular.
One of my favorite shows.
We used to just call it being awake, and I was never fond of that either. But anyway, the red pill comes from The Matrix, and so you became red-pilled. You saw some of the inner machinations of how the world really works, but you've also got this interesting background of being in Hollywood and being in charitable organizations, etc., where you're meeting people like, you know, at that time Citizen Trump, but soon to be President Trump. And back to this idea of Hollywood being a game, when I was in Hollywood, and this still troubles me to this day, I had to get about 18 months of Hollywood in the rearview mirror before I could even make sense of much of what I'd seen. What's your opinion on that, Rox?
I think I agree with you. I think that Hollywood has taken the freedom of our innocence to such a point. I think that if we're going after sex offenders, it's not going to be easy. It is, you know, America has to know this is not going to be easy because they've been doing it for generations. We're not talking about people that are new at this game. It's going to be very difficult to stop because parents, we want that for our children. If that's what they want, we want that for them. We want them to be a star. We want them to be like Britney Spears when she was young. We want them to be in Disney. And really, parents, they have to know right now this is very dangerous. We're living in a very dangerous world, and there's no getting around it. And Hollywood is dangerous.
Yeah, that atmosphere seems to cultivate depravity for some reason, and it's probably, you know, the money, the fame,
yes,
the influence, and the it seems that a lot of psychosis is driven towards power. And it seems like people in those positions, you know, abuse their power to a large extent. And then, as John even pointed out, even today you have parents who are willing to, you know, basically sacrifice their children to pedophiles for some kind of monetary gain or whatever the issue is. And it's so unfortunate and sad. And not only that, but the media glamorizes this culture and ignores the problems that it creates. But Rox, let's move on to other areas because we only got about 25 minutes left.
Uh-oh.
The increased, let's talk about the migration situation in U.S. and Europe. the Islamic migration situation, as well as the terrorism that we're seeing in Europe. We continue to see day after day these terror attacks. Some are smaller than others. We had the failed bombing today. The device did not detonate properly, which saved dozens of lives, from what I understand. And the politicians continue to double down. You know, this is not going to deter us. We'll continue to bring in, you know, Islamic refugees. And anybody who calls out Islamic terrorism for what it is, Islamic, is labeled Islamophobic. And the sexual assaults have increased in Europe in a dramatic way because this opening of the doors for this mass migration. What are your opinions on this? Where do you think this is going to end with Europe and the U.S.?
Well, my background is Swedish, and it's very sad to see what's happened to Sweden. And I spoke to a gentleman the other day who's from Denmark, and he said Denmark is gone. And Sweden doesn't even want to admit that the Muslims have taken over. I've produced a magazine, Palm Beach International, for two years now. And I had the last magazine, I had a terrible time getting it out of Sweden. And it was delayed several months. So I know that we're having a lot of problems there. When I look at Paris, a place that I love to visit, it doesn't look like Paris anymore. It doesn't look like a place I want to go to. I've been to London. I was invited by BBC to cover the wedding there. I was frightened then. I don't even know how many years ago that was. I have to think about that. And I saw everybody getting as close as they possibly could to the chapel and to the whole area there in London to get close to, you know, the bride and groom as they, of course, were going into Buckingham Palace. And I thought, where's the security? There are thousands of people. There are thousands of, photo and journalists. I thought, where's the security? And you could feel it then that there was no control in Britain. And when you saw the first real terror incident on the bridge, there were no guns.
Yeah.
The police, no guns. Now, I can't fathom that. If you've been to Britain or to London recently, you know that it's a mob scene any day of the week. It's just, you know, it's crazy. And when I see all of this happening, America has to see this, that we have to have the border. There is no choice. Israel has a border. Our Bible is filled with walls and borders and barriers to protect Israel, to protect those countries. And we need the same thing. We have to protect what we've been given, which is our freedom. There isn't any other way.
Real quick on this, and you're exactly right. What do you think about the calls to censor extremism from Theresa May today? But we can expand this into the wider topic of internet censorship in general.
Yes, we can. And we can go on Facebook if you like.
Sure. Well, let's get into this.
Well, I tell you something. If you want to talk Facebook, you want to talk Google, all you have to do is look at George Soros. Look at how much stock this man owns. In fact, it was about a week ago, I was talking to Robin, our producer, and I said, you know, Robin, something's up. Soros has bought all this Kohl's. That's the department store. I can't imagine. Why is he buying all that stock? I go, department stores are on the decline because of Amazon. Well, P.S., Kohl's is just opening up all new Amazon stores within the store. So, he is the deep state. He is the substance.
He's the deep pockets. He's the deep pockets of the deep state.
So when you talk about all these different things, and it's true, if you talk about all these different things, that's really where you need to look. And there are other countries that want to convict him.
Mm-hmm.
He's not allowed in those countries anymore, but yet United States, they don't bother to look at what he's doing. And are we going to be able to have a law in place that can actually control Google, that can control Facebook. Facebook wants to be a community church. What do you think about that, boys?
A community church?
Yes, they do.
Would Mr. Zuckerberg be the communal god of that church? Because because frankly, Rox, I always like to think of him as more of a bobblehead.
Well, he's touring 50 states right now, so that's some bobblehead. He's hired Obama's strongest political people in press and some of these other areas to travel with him. So this is his plan. He met in Texas with a lot of the churches there, and I think a lot of the ministers and so forth were kind of curious as to why he did that. And it's because he really does feel that there's a platform there for him to bring communities together for church.
Yeah, I'm seeing that. I was going to ask you, what does a Facebook church entail? How would that look?
I think that it would be on a world basis, and I think that a lot of people find that Christianity is not open to all types of people, to all types of beliefs. And I think that he sees that opportunity as a philanthropic. He can look at this and say, you know what? I can join this person, that group, this group, and I can make them feel good.
Rox, I just, for those of you who just joined us or just joined us in the last few moments, our guest this hour, hour two, Friday, September 15th on the Hagman Report is Rox Chella. Whose resume is just so impressive. She's worked in Hollywood. She's launched fashion lines, worked in the philanthropic world, and most recently host of the Mad T Show. But this is truly a defining moment here at the Hagman Report with special guest Rox Chella. She just reported that Zuckerberg, the little bobblehead, is on a tour, a goodwill tour, if you will, perhaps a bit of a fact-finding tour. To do what? To launch a church.
Community.
On a community, got it. Thank you, Rox. Words are important. Thank you. a community, communal church on Facebook. It is possible, Hagman listeners and viewers, you just heard where the religion of the beast, the religion that is prophesied by the false prophet.
Yes.
This may be where that religion hangs its hat.
Is this the Antichrist?
Well, perhaps, or one of the facilitators of the Antichrist. But certainly, Rox, I would imagine one thing we can agree on is, we have got to be in Antichrist times at this point.
Yes, we are. I believe we are, John.
I believe that too. You know, when you look at when you look across. The different pillars, the different constructs that we call society. When you look at academia, the church, media, Hollywood, DC, Wall Street, you can throw Las Vegas in there. There's such a godlessness at this time. And I've been asking guests this the last couple of nights as I've been so blessed to fill in for Doug Hagman here in his absence. I'm going to ask you this question as well, Rox.
All right.
62 million people voted for Donald Trump,
yes,
give or take. And many of the guests I've run this by agreed that the vote was not so much for Donald Trump per se, but the vote was a vote against many things these 62 million people did not like seeing their country turn into. The 8 years of the Obama administration, and you could argue the preceding 8 years of the globalist George W. Bush, who I voted for in 2004. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. So my question to you, Rox, the 62 million people who voted for Donald Trump, they know what they don't want. They don't want this open border, mass immigration, mass migration. They don't want terror in their streets. They don't want to be disarmed so that they're a population like Venezuela that can't even flip their government and get food and clean water. We don't want these things. And the list goes on and on. But do these 62 million people know what they do want? What is the condition of the spirit of our country at this time, Rox?
Well, I think that we want a non-bipartisan president. I think we want a president that's going to bring the Democrats and the Republicans together for the American people. And that's what we need. He's in that White House, and for the first time in a long time, we see prayer.
Yeah.
And right. You know, well, we're going to see prayer in the White House. We're going to see a lot of hell elsewhere, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, you got the witches, you know, casting spells on Donald Trump.
They're coming out of, oh, my God, this one, Claire, she just wrote a book exposing her whole life, and she's been part of politics and part of the government for years. Mm-hmm. And she's talking about how she puts spells on people. And have you not heard how people, these witches have put spells on our president?
It's frightening. Even Hillary Clinton, in her new book, talks about wanting to make voodoo dolls out of journalists and stick needles through them. I wanted to kind of talk to you, if we can, about Hillary's book, What Happened, just to go over the mindset of where she's coming from. Now, we joke, and many people have joked, that she's like a bad cold that just won't go away.
Yeah, she's like a rash.
You use
the cream, now we're headed for the prescription.
So she's making the rounds this week on because of her new book that says titled What Happened, and many excerpts of the book have come out now, and it just shows how arrogant and just, I say, delusional she is. She's blamed everybody and everything for her loss except herself, even blaming the millions of white people who voted for Trump, blaming misogyny, sexism, Russia, on and on and on and on and on. The mindset that, I mean, we definitely dodged a bullet with her not getting elected president. Can you speak a little bit to where you, the delusional mindset of Hillary Clinton?
Well, having taken that red pill really scared me because she is all of those things. And we really, President Trump was our best choice. He's a businessman. She didn't even want to go out into these states and talk about her agenda, what she was thinking. She thought she was above that. And when she wrote this book, looking for excuses to cover her shame amongst the Democratic Party, well, if anything, I think the Democrats should be ashamed. Seeing her out there and saying these things, she was on The View the other day, and please, spare me. If they don't take The View off the air, oh, my gosh.
It is
that
a terrible
joy
show.
There, she makes me crazy. they make me crazy.
Yep.
I don't know where they come from with this stuff. And it's like she walks in, and it's like cheerleaders are going off. It's like, what? It's like, are they panning this or what? I said, who is cheering for Hillary Clinton? They were on The View. And the things she said, oh, my gosh, Joe, it was crazy. Russia, Russia, Russia. And if I would have become president, I would have made sure we got to the bottom of that. But we didn't discuss all of her emails. Will we ever get to the bottom of any of this? From a woman's point of view, I'm ashamed of her. I really am.
You know, there was a part of the book that we read on the show the other day where she tells a story, which I don't believe is true, not one bit. I don't believe one. She tells a story of women coming up to her after the election to apologize for not voting for her and how she just couldn't find it in herself to absolve these people. But I don't believe for one second anybody came up to her after the election and said, oh, I wish I would have voted for you. Nobody wanted her. And that's just the thing. Is it the disconnect in the establishment power system that says an elitist candidate with a psychotic behavior personality thing can become president regardless of the will of the American people? I mean, are they going to continue to push these candidates who are so unwanted?
Rocks, this is so not funny. It's funny.
It is funny.
It is. I mean, this is really good. This is really good stuff. You know what I'm saying, John and Joe? This is like stuff you can't make up. You can't even think it up. Here she is out there begging for the world to forgive her or to see someone else for what she did. Blame mm-hmm. someone else for what she did. And she's so confused. And I think that really, what were they all thinking? What was Searles thinking? What was the deep state thinking? Putting her out there like that. I don't know. I'm kind of glad they do, because she's been on every talk show promoting her show. And I'm glad that we as Americans are seeing her as she really is.
Yeah. And that's very true. With your background, let me ask you this. We know that the Democratic Party really right now is without a leader. They don't know who they're going to put in that next spot to run for president. We've seen a number of names come out from Senator Elizabeth Warren, but we also see the Democrats moving to a populist type of mindset, putting it out there that they'd like actors like The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, or even Mark Zuckerberg.
Let's talk about, Zuckerberg's another story, but let's talk about The Rock.
Okay.
Okay, now, I love The Rock, had lunch with him. I have filmed him, interviewed him, and I've always been a fan of him. When he did the SNL skit, where do you know about this, guys?
Yeah, I know where you're going.
Okay, and he made a molesting robot.
Yep.
That's it for me. It was over. It was done. And then they stopped for the season right there. That was it. And I thought, you cunning SNL. Mm-hmm. They couldn't deal with the backlash, so they did it deliberately to end the show like that. And I thought, oh my gosh, no. We shouldn't even see his shows. We should ban everything he does. Because he had a choice. He really had a choice as to whether or not he was going to do that skit. And he dropped in my eyes.
Well, how does that work? And you have great experience in this area of being an actress yourself. And in something like that with Saturday Night Live, how much control does he really have? Because if he refused to do that, I find it hard to believe that they'd say, well, fine, then you're not going to be hosting the show.
That's right. That's what they would say.
But at the same time, I can understand his mindset of, all the stuff we're doing, these are skits, it's comedy, and anything's
really
up for grabs.
Can you really justify it, Joe?
No, I can't. But I'm trying to get in the mindset of an actor to understand why they would, I guess, be okay with doing it. I can understand the mindset behind saying, yeah, this is a sketch, it's comedy, it's edgy, but it could be funny kind of mentality. But
if you are, he's a very, very wealthy man. He's mm-hmm. made a lot of money on America. Okay? We've all gone to his movies, supported him very well. So to take an issue like this that is so sensitive and exploit it the way he did, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I think it's, I don't know that he can repair that.
No.
Even if they come back and do a skit why Castle Burgers? No.
He's not going to skit his way out of that, Rocks. But, this brings up a dark, but I think important topic. We'll run it by you. Yesterday, we read reports of this rapper, whose name I will not say on our show. I'm not going to give him this kind of exposure.
Thank you. Who
made a video and distributed the video, probably on some of Bobblehead's platforms that we've been demonetized off of. That's for another show. but anyway, so this rapper, Blank, made a video for his song, Blank, where he... had a little black kid and a little white kid step up to a noose, and then the little white kid is helped into the noose and thus hung. And at the end of the video shows his feet kicking the last few breaths of life out of him. What the hell is going on with optics these days? That makes what The Rock did look almost like vaudeville,
Yeah.
And this goes on and on. Rocks, you and I are both old school Hollywood veterans, and look, Hollywood has always been seedy. Hollywood has always been self-centered. Hollywood has always been, at least in my time there, it was a corporatized, politically correct, closed circuit, weirdo environment. Okay, that's what it is. And oh, and by the way, it eats your entire life. But man, the mask has just fallen off the last couple years. It's anything goes. I call it Clown Town.
Right. But you see it. But we're seeing it now. We see it for what it truly, truly is. I did a quick little story on Procter & Gamble. I don't know if you guys were able to see it, but I was so upset. They're promoting this new The Talk, and it's a black family, or not even family, a gal and a mother and a little boy and her mother, whatever, different little scenarios. And they were taking us back to the 50s and the 60s, where the word N was a bad word, and they said you're never, you know, you're going to hear that the rest of your life, and these kinds of things. And I was so upset that I had to do a video, and Robin, as I said, our producer, covered it, and I said, we have to stop using this product, Procter & Gamble. Don't take me back there.
Hey, Roxella, I don't mean to interrupt you. We are out of time. We were we were just listening to your stories. I wasn't paying attention to the clock. But we're gonna have
you
back on.
We were so absorbed in what great discussion.
All over the place. It's too much fun. Well, anyway, the Procter & Gamble. If you get a chance to see it, you'll see I really quite exploded. I don't like what they're doing right now. The whites against the blacks.
Neither do
like
we.
It.
Folks, Roxella, The Mad Tea Show, follow her on Twitter. Go to HagmanReport.com. The links to Roxella are all in tonight's show's show
Thank
notes.
You so much.
Thanks, guys. I love you. By the way, you both look so handsome tonight.
Oh, well, thank you. Shucks. God bless you. We'll be
you
right
too.
Back. Don't go anywhere.
About the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, DanielHoldings.com. That's DanielHoldings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to DanielHoldings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.